Mr. McIndoe, reel 4.
But they thinned out the farther we went north, would be north, the farther we went north or west.
Well, the nearer you got to the front line.
Yes. The fewer the villages that they'd previously left, vacated their farms and joined the rest of the refugees, really.
Go on.
And then eventually we arrived at... went through various towns. Well, as we got a bit nearer, we could see then the result of the enemy's guns that he directed onto the countryside that we were going through. We were coming up to more shell holes. The shell holes were not so far distant apart, they were closer together. Devastation amongst the houses and farms that had once been there.
Good.
and our first experience then of a trench was those that had been left there by the French in and around Elbert. Small gun pits, small sniping boxes that had been placed there.
What were these sniping boxes like?
They were constructed of just of thin wood, fairly thin wood, tapering into the trench wall and covered over strongly with all round with sandbags, with a piece of black material tacked onto the back, so as when a man took up a firing position with his gun, with his rifle, he would not be silhouetted behind light that would give light. It would be blackened or darkened out.
Yes, any other impressions as you got nearer to the front? Any other things you saw that stick in your mind?
It had been, Elbert had been a lovely town, and it had one very conspicuous church spire, very tall, and it had the figure of the Virgin Mary on the top in gilt. She was holding the sun in her arms, and the bottom dome had been struck with a shell. And she was in a forward-leaning position as a diver would leave a springboard before entering into a dive in a swimming pool. with one arm extended.
Yes.
It had been... like this for some months, I understand, and the local people used to say that when the Virgin Mary fell from the top of this dome and church spire, when eventually she'd fall, the war would come to an end.
That's a very good description. Now, you yourself moved into the lines. Could you, first of all, just give me a general description of the sector that you were posted to? Just tell me what it looked like, what you remember of it, how close it was to the German line, and so on.
Yes, our first experience of our home to be for a few months was was in this D1 sector, which was overlooking Fricourt, and it was full of mine craters, and mining was still in progress, to which we all had to take part. Everybody gave a hand.
So
there was a few sappers employed,
yes,
there from the engineers.
Yeah,
this sector had been really knocked about and disfigured. The wall of the trenches here and there was in a bad state of repair, and and all ranks then were asked to fill sandbags and square up the traverses and the trenches.
So this would have
in
been
order to make them more yes, presentable.
Yes. So this
apart
would
apart from defensive.
So this would have been the first main job you were given when you got there.
Yes.
Tell me in a little more detail what kind of condition the trenches were in, and exactly how you improved them.
Had been struck by shells, and they were actually in a bad state of repair and were hardly serviceable and did not meet the purpose to which that they were intended. So all ranks had to turn in and make them more serviceable by filling sandbags and shoring up and making them good again.
Were there any particular methods you used in shoring them up?
Like a story.
Well, look, let's talk a bit about mining, because you've already said that this was a major activity in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Start off by telling me what the mines were like, you know, from the entrance right up to the face. Imagine yourself going into it and start from the entrance and work your way up to the face.
That's quite vivid, yes. Yeah. Well, this particular sector, the enemy trenches were no more than 35 yards apart. And one could not hold ordinary conversation in the accepted tone of everyday conversation, because you had to, your voice and everything had to be subdued.
So you'd come up to the entrance of the mine. Now, what would that be like?
The mines were still active, and we had sappers down there, and all ranks had to give a hand. At the top of the mine, we had a mangle-type pulley, which was necessity to load with grease and animal fat was plastered all around the handles of it to stop any squeaking that it may give, especially when it was pulling a load. Well, we were lowered this pulley was fortified with, shored up with a wood structure, thick tree wood structure, with about six sandbags deep on top and sides, because it was vulnerable to attack. And it was necessary to preserve the top of the pit head, as it were.
Mm.
Well, the crew were lowered down on this pulley type rope, lowered down a shaft, which I can't tell you how many feet, but it was quite a considerable depth, into the sap, which was only about 4'6" high, 4'6" high, say, and perhaps less than 2 feet wide.
Describe what it would be like going from this point up to the face of the digging.
And to get to the front of the mine face, where the charge was subsequently going to be placed, one had to crawl some 30 or 40 yards to know that you were immediately under the enemy trench.
Now,
and it was,
that gives me an idea of what the trench looked like. Now, tell me how the actual digging was organised.
Oh, it was hewed out by pick and hands mostly, and shovel or a scoop. The entrenching tool used to pick up quite a lot of it and fill it into a sandbag. These sandbags then had to be taken to the bottom of the pulley, dragged along the sap along to the pulley. There they were fastened onto the pulley and by the pulling of a string told the fellow working the pulley to pull them to the surface.
I see. Good.
Now,
were you going to say something else about the work? I was wondering whether this kind of work had any particular dangers or difficulties attached to it.
You never knew, because every now and again we had what was called a listening period. We would listen for half an hour after working for half an hour, and then one would sit down and the engineers, the sappers, would use a trumpet type instrument onto the wall where that we had been tunneling to hear any particular knocking that the Germans might be affecting. Or how close they were to us or we to them.
What sort of things would you hear? Did you listen?
Yes, scratching and scraping and a dull thud, as though there was somebody. See? Yes.
What about the tunnels themselves? Were there any problems from tunnel collapsing and things like that? Or were they all nicely shored up with wood?
They were, no. The wood was very difficult to get. No, that was the point. They were only shored up here and there in vital spots where the seam was perhaps gravel instead of thick clay. See, that's the only part that they were shored up. Where the ground looked to be more in a state of collapse than the rest of the seam. Yeah.
While you were working in the mines, were there any detonations by the British engineers?
Oh, yes.
Describe what would happen at the time of detonation.
Well, At the time of detonation, there was one very big mine. It was known as the G18. We were told this particular time to get out. Everybody was evacuated, and it was very early hours of the morning. Nobody worked there or had worked there for 24 hours because it had been stuffed and plugged with explosive. And then, of course, they had to put a lot back to stop the backdraft, you see. Get that thrust that way.
What happened?
Yes, and then everybody would be told to evacuate it and get yourself laid down there, some right down